Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. We're talking today about medical marijuana and how Maryland's emerging market is taking shape. A week from next Monday, after months of delay, the state's Medical Cannabis Commission is set to announce which aspiring applicants will receive preliminary approval for licenses to grow and process medical cannabis, the scientific name for marijuana. Licenses for dispensaries and more processors will be announced later. The first licenses were supposed to have been awarded in January, but the process has been hampered by various delays. The commission received twice as many applications as it had expected and had to figure out how to process them. That's despite the fact that the application was more than 60 pages long and cost thousands of dollars to apply. The applicants are a diverse group. According to the Washington Post, they range from small business owners to wealthy executives, from former Drug Enforcement Administration agents to the politically connected. Elected officials are among them. The Post revealed last month that Baltimore County State Delegate Dan Morheim, a doctor who has advocated for the legalization of medical marijuana for years, is part of a team applying for a license to sell the drug. What's driving these entrepreneurs? How does Maryland's market compare to that in other states which have legalized medical marijuana? And just how does a brand new market like this take shape? We have three guests with us today to help answer these questions. John Kagiya is Executive Vice President of Industry Analytics for New Frontier, a data and analytics company focused exclusively on the legal cannabis industry. He joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. John Kagiya, welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Sheila.
Also with us by phone is Gareth Murray. He's an associate pastor of First Baptist Church in Silver Spring and a former Democratic state delegate. He's part of a company that has applied for licenses to grow, process, and dispense cannabis. Gareth Murphy, I'm glad you could join us.
Good morning. It's Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y.
Murray, I'm sorry.
I
think I said it right once and wrong once. I'll try to be careful. Gareth Murray, glad that you're with us. And here with me in the studio is retired Maryland State Police Captain Lee Maddox. She's an advocate for drug legalization through the organization LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And she's also CEO of a company that has applied for all three licenses, growing, processing, and dispensing. Lee Maddox, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sheila.
So, John Kagiya, let me start with you. I have read that Maryland's medical marijuana market is particularly attractive to investors. Is that true? And if so, why?
It is, Sheila. And Maryland is attractive for a number of reasons. One is the state has benefited from learning from the examples of all of the states that have legalized medical cannabis prior to Maryland and really tried to take the best elements of the regulatory models and incorporate those into Maryland's laws. So it's a well-written law. The expectations are very clear up front, and I think that lowers one of the barriers to participation in these markets is being able to clearly understand what is expected from the businesses that are operating in this industry. And second, the states have varied in their approach to accepting applications from entities that are outside of the state in terms of limiting or requiring residency requirements for investors who would be looking to participate in the state's either medical or adult use cannabis programs. And because Maryland didn't really set any of those restraints in place, it made it possible for investors from around the country to look at the investments opportunities in Maryland, find partners on the ground, and really kind of bring or increase the amount of available capital to participate in the state's medical program. And so for those two reasons, a clearly articulated law and low barriers to entry for external investors have made this a particularly attractive market.
How many other states have approved medical marijuana?
So we have 25 states that have approved medical, with two recent additions just earlier this year, with Ohio and Pennsylvania legalizing medical through their legislatures just a couple of months ago. And so, you know, we now have a majority of states that have either approved medical marijuana in the full sense or which have approved the CBD laws, which prohibit cannabis products that have the psychoactive components, THC, but which allow use of cannabis products that include CBD, which has been known to have very significant therapeutic value. And so total, we're now looking at 93% of Americans are currently living in a jurisdiction where some form of medical cannabis is allowed, either through full medical legalization that allows both CBD and THC products, or just through the CBD-only laws.
Lee Maddox, as I mentioned, you are a retired Maryland State Police captain and an advocate for drug legalization. You work with LEAP, law enforcement against prohibition. So how did you come to support legalization?
Well, through my career with the Maryland State Police, I saw many line-of-duty deaths. And over time, I began to see a correlation between deaths and violence, specifically gun violence, and a lot of the underpinnings of the drug violence and gun violence that we saw bothered me quite a bit. And when I retired from the state police,
Which was when, by the way?
I retired in 2007.
Uh-huh.
And then I began teaching at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law. And I worked with students here in the communities in Baltimore. And their stories I heard over and over and over again. And eventually, I came to the conclusion that our drug policies were completely upside down and needed to be changed to a model that embraces public health.
And then how did you get from that to actually wanting to be part of the new medical cannabis business?
Well, that's a really great question. It was a long journey because the law took so long to kind of unfold. And I was in the legislature as a private citizen testifying on all kinds of different issues, including civil asset forfeiture and adult use of marijuana or cannabis. And over time, I just decided that it was the right path. And then I partnered up with Neil Franklin and Sarah Love. And we
Neil Franklin, I know, is also a former Maryland State Police officer.
He's a retired major with Maryland State
okay.
Police. Yes, ma'am. And Sarah Love is a policy director for the ACLU. So we and our spouses, respective spouses, teamed up together. And we decided that because we had been advocating for this for so long, that we had a responsibility as a good citizen to actually see to it that this was done properly here on the East Coast, and specifically here in Maryland, because that is where we hail.
Gareth Murray, you are a pastor and a former state legislator. What is motivating you to get into this market?
Basically, I'm looking at it from the medical aspect, and I think that, if you look at what's going on right now, the big push to move patients off of opioids, and the question becomes, what else can we use? Well, cannabis, medical cannabis, is one of those things that can be used. I have been aware of the value of cannabis since I lived in California. I moved back here in the 80s, but I know that cannabis can be quite helpful from a medicinal standpoint. And so looking at what's best for humankind drove me to become involved. I met the group that I'm working with, Phytogenesis, through a good friend of mine who was involved. And after hearing more about the group and the fact that they only want to do medical, then I was able to buy in and become a part of the group.
That is Gareth Murray, Director of Government and Community Affairs for Phytogenesis, a company that's vying to be part of Maryland's medical marijuana market. Here on Midday on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. Here with me in the studio is Lee Maddox, CEO of CBH Ventures, another company that's applying for licenses, and John Kaguya, Executive Vice President of Industry Analytics for New Frontier, a company that studies the legal cannabis industry. Listeners, how do you feel about the fact that medical marijuana will soon be available in Maryland, probably next year? We'd love to hear your thoughts on this whole picture. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. John Kaguya, am I right that compared to other states, Maryland is allowing a relatively limited number of producers?
It is. So at least in the way the law is currently written, the state will only permit 15 growers. There's some concern that given the very strong demand expected on the patient side, that 15 producers may not be enough to meet the market's full demand. But we will know that quite soon after the market launches. There are a couple of considerations when one is setting the number of producers in a market. One is trying to ensure that there's enough capacity in the market to supply the demand from patients and to do so at reasonable prices. But the other is for the state to set up a system whereby they can have sufficient oversight of the producers to prevent diversion or leakage of the product being produced into the gray or illicit markets. And so by trying to constrain the number of producers, the state was trying to ensure that it could keep a fairly close eye on how the product is being produced and where it goes through the value chain. But by only limiting it to 15 producers in a state with 6 million residents, there is some concern that may just not be enough to meet demand.
Well, and also, do I understand correctly that paired with that, Maryland has a pretty broad list of medical conditions for which a pretty broad set of medical professionals can prescribe use of medical marijuana. In other words, it's likely to be a pretty big market for patients, no?
Absolutely. And you asked earlier why Maryland was so attractive. Part of the attractiveness of this is an investment opportunity is because of the number of qualifying conditions and specifically which conditions were included. I think the two key conditions that were included that are going to be very significant drivers of the total market size, one is severe or chronic pain, and the other is nausea. So with those two conditions, you really have a very broad spectrum of qualifying patients. Severe pain is, as Gav absolutely correctly stated, has been a major driver of the opioid crisis that the country now faces, and there does appear to be a very strong growing body of evidence to suggest that cannabis is a very effective either substitution or concomitant therapy for chronic pain. And it also will include everything, patients who are suffering from everything from cancers to other debilitating conditions, which creates a very substantial market opportunity.
We have to take a quick break here. I'm eager to find out what my other two guests think about those uses of medical marijuana and also eager listeners to hear what you think about it, whether you think, are you someone with a condition that might be treated? Do you hope to try medical cannabis once it's available? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about medical marijuana, medical cannabis. The state will announce the first round of preliminary licenses this month, months later than originally expected. We're talking to retired Maryland State Police Captain Lee Maddox, a drug legalization advocate, as well as CEO of a company that's applying to grow, process, and sell cannabis. With us by phone is Gareth Murray, a pastor and former member of the House of Delegates, who is part of a different company aiming to do the same thing. And cannabis industry analyst John Kaguya is also with us. You're welcome to be part of this conversation. We'd love to know what you think about the fact that medical marijuana is coming to Maryland. Whether are you a business owner? Can you picture starting a company in such a new industry? How would you go about learning the ropes? If you've got some thoughts about that, send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410- 662-8780. We were talking before the break about the medical conditions for which medical cannabis can be prescribed under Maryland law. And Gareth Murray, since you had talked about hoping to be able to replace some opioid use with all the overdoses and other problems that we're seeing with opioids, you talked about the extent to which marijuana might be able to replace that. Do you think that how do you expect the medical profession to react? They under this law would have the legal right or the legal permission to prescribe medical cannabis. Do you think they'll be quick to do it?
I think some of them will. I have a friend whose physician has already stated to him that if medical cannabis were legal in the state of Maryland, he would have already referred him for medical cannabis, because he's using opioids right now, and the patient doesn't like it, and the physician doesn't like it. But that's all that he has available to him. So some physicians, I think, are already in position and just waiting. Others, I think, are still in a place where they are afraid to even become involved until the federal government says it's okay. They understand that the state is saying that it's okay, but their feeling is that until the feds change their laws, they don't want to get involved with it. So I think it's a matter of educating many of the physicians, because believe it or not, I mean, there's still physicians who basically look at cannabis as just something with which one can get a good high.
I'd like to join the question that that listeners may have picked up, the difference in your approach compared to Lee Maddox, who's here with me in the studio. Pastor Murray, you said a few minutes ago that you were interested in getting into this market specifically and only to deal with medical marijuana. Lee Maddox, of course, we've talked about you being an advocate for legalization of marijuana in particular. And there are many people who think that the step toward medical marijuana in Maryland will be a first step toward broader legalization. Is that your expectation, Lee Maddox?
Well, it depends on how the markets play out over time. But what we are seeing in states like Colorado and other states, but specifically Colorado, we've seen a dual track between the medicine side, medical cannabis, and adult use. And those tracks in Colorado seem to be working out very well. So it would seem that that trend would continue here nationally for a period of time. My guess is 5 to 10 years, but it's just a guess. After that, all the markets are going to change again. That's just the way markets run. So it's exciting time to be. This is a brand new industry. We are setting up an industry that has never been set up anywhere in the United States except for those states on the West. So this is in Maryland, and we're setting up a brand new industry in a way that is going to translate very nice to East Coast values. And we have to remember, it's so important that we have to remember to give back to the community. So we have these communities that have been ravaged by our drug policies and the drug war. And these communities, as we've seen with a lot of the violence and tensions that have happened over the summer, this unrest, if you will, has demonstrated to us here locally very clearly the need to give back to communities. And some of those communities are in Baltimore City. Some of those communities are in the Eastern Shore. Some of those communities are from where I live, which is in Harford County, Maryland, in the Edgewood area. We have seen terrible, terrible pains inflicted on the communities and law enforcement also. So part of the reason that we decided to get in the business, in addition to the market trends, was also to be able to protect and serve, if you will, on the local level.
John Kaguya, as an industry analyst, is it your impression that many of, as I mentioned, there's 146 applicants for growing licenses. Do you think many of those budding businesses are expecting that Maryland will legalize marijuana for recreational use pretty soon? Is that actually what their business plan looks at?
Well, we would put it this way. We would certainly advise any company looking at pursuing a medical marijuana opportunity to base its kind of profitability or growth projections solely on the likelihood or the possibility that adult use is going to be legalized at some point in the future. There's a couple of reasons for that. One is that, as Lee correctly stated, it's very difficult to project when Maryland might take up the debate to legalize adult use. We have certainly seen an acceleration in the number of states that are moving toward adult use legalization, but there are no guarantees about when that is likely to happen, and therefore it makes it a very kind of considerable question whether these businesses will be able to make that transition. And then second is, if Maryland does legalize adult use, there's no certainty that the regulatory structure that will be put in place for the adult use market will be one that takes producers out of the medical market or gives priority to producers from the medical market into the adult use market. It is possible, and we've seen some states do this, who have tried to create a siloed system between the two industries. And so the Maryland medical producers may end up being constrained to the medical side of the market and then have to reapply to participate on the adult use side. So with questions like that still unanswered or unclear, we would strongly advise against, you know, pursuing this with the assumption that when adult use is legalized, that it's going to create a natural opportunity for people who are already operational on the medical side.
Gareth Murray, given what you said about wanting your business to focus just on medical marijuana, is that comforting to you to hear that if a broader legalization of marijuana, if recreational marijuana were to be okayed in Maryland, that it might be on a separate track?
Well, I think, for starters, whether recreational use comes or not, we're sticking strictly with the medical marijuana industry. So it's really of no consequence to us. I think it would have to be on a separate track, because I doubt very seriously that the quality of the product or the cleanliness, for lack of a better term, of the product would be monitored as closely as it is for medicinal. Anyone doing research, any physician who refers a patient, wants clean product used in order to treat that patient and in order to do the research. For recreational use, not to say that anything goes, but I don't think the level of the quality of the product would have to be the same. But again, we're not interested in recreational.
Right, you've made
whatsoever.
You've
and
made...
I think in terms of, just as Ms. Maddox said, you can't predict when it will come. And knowing my friends in the legislature, they will have the opportunity. One of the nice things about not being at the head of the movement is that we can look at the data from other states in terms of the level of interaction with the justice system of folks who have been, quote, using marijuana for recreational use. They'll have all kinds of data at their disposal to help them craft whatever legislation they go forward with, if in fact they choose to do that.
This is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with cannabis industry analyst John Cagia, as well as Gareth Murray, whom you just heard, and Lee Maddox, who's with me in the studio. They have both applied to grow, process, and sell medical marijuana in Maryland with separate companies. You can join this conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Kathleen has called us from Baltimore. Kathleen, welcome to Midday.
Hello.
Hello, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine.
Good, good.
And your comment?
Yeah, I was calling in when I was, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 terminal colon cancer when I was 13 years old. And it wasn't until I was 16 that I even realized that marijuana could be used medicinally. And it wasn't even until I accidentally overheard a family conversation about whether or not she was willing to use it to reduce her pain and to finally eat. She hadn't been eating at Christmas dinner, and my aunt and uncle, who have been marijuana users for a long time now, marijuana smokers, and eventually talked to me about its recreational and medical usage. I overheard the conversation where she was too ashamed to smoke weed because she was too worried that she'd be a bad influence to my sister and I. And that year for Easter, I ended up buying her first weed, and it was me for the rest of, before she passed away, I was the one who was going out and having to purchase marijuana from my mother, who had terminal cancer, and she couldn't eat for years before that moment. I remember the first time she smoked, it was the first time that she ate a full meal, and she was too embarrassed to do it for so long because of the stigma that that society has, not because it wasn't actually going to help her, but she was even told by her doctor subtly to go and try and find some, and it ended up being her 16-year-old daughter. So I think that if Maryland has the ability to stop that from happening, and also start providing marijuana usage for somebody like myself who suffers from anxiety, and then friends of mine who have extreme conditions with their digestive system, it would be incredible to have it for both recreational and medical use in Maryland, or it's going to be.
Kathleen, I appreciate your sharing your thoughts. Lee Maddox, when you hear that, does that confirm that you think you're on the right path trying to get into this industry?
Yeah, absolutely, Sheila. And it's one of the many stories that I referenced earlier. And I've not only had stories with people like Kathleen here in the city of Baltimore, but I've also had conversations with doctors over and over and over again. And I can tell you from my heart of hearts and speaking with medical professionals, healthcare providers, I am convinced there's therapeutic value and cannabis, marijuana, whatever you want to call it, there is therapeutic value. And I'm feeling blessed right now to be in the early stages of this industry and being surrounded by so many good people who are seeing the same things that we're seeing. And it's right around the corner, Kathleen, so just hold on there and let your friends know that it's not going to be tomorrow. It's going to be probably another 18 months or so, but we're going to get this program up and running.
John Cagia, does that time estimate, does that match your analysis that it will probably be another year and a half before dispensaries are actually dispensing medical cannabis in Maryland?
It does, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that we always caution people when they think about how these laws pass and how they get implemented is that the passage of the law is really just the first of a very, very long process in getting the industry up and running. So generally you'll have the law passed, and then you have a rulemaking process that can run anywhere from 6 months to a year. And once the rules have been issued, the license application process has begun. You then have another anywhere from 12 to 18 months, or 12 to 24 months, to actually get the businesses operational. So if we think about the process that Maryland has just gone through, what the announcement that's going to be made next week is just going to be announcements for the first 15 processors and producers clearing the first stage of the licensing process. They then have to resubmit for the stage two, get cleared for that, and then once they get approved for the stage through the stage two process, they then can begin establishing their operations. So there's still a long road to go. The state has been very explicit in its expectations for producers, processors, and for retailers. And so there's a lot of operational things that they have to put in place before this market is up and running. I think Lee's dead on. It's going to be at least 18 months before patients begin to get served.
Lolita has called us from Baltimore with a question. Lolita, welcome to Midday. Lolita?
Yes. Oh, hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
I have several questions, and I'll try to keep it really brief. For the medical marijuana, what is the THC content? Because, yes, one of my concerns is, you know, is that, you know, people will be, like, migrating to using it before, you know, for the getting high effect. And I know there's a lot of people who will be using it for medical reasons, but I'm asking for the standpoint. I'm an acupuncturist, and I've had a patient who moved to Arizona because it was legal, and honestly, I didn't think his condition really warranted the use of medical marijuana because it was pretty much being controlled with acupuncture. So that's the other piece. Like, when do people look into other holistic modalities to help control their pain or manage in relationship with the Western medicine practice that they're seeking their pain?
Okay, Lolita, let me stop you there and see whether John Kaguya, can I throw Lolita's questions to you? She's asking about the amount of THC that would be in the medical marijuana in Maryland. Would that? I don't know whether that would be standardized in some way. John Kaguya?
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I do.
It would not be standardized, and at least the way the law is written, there are no caps on maximum THC levels. And we would actually say that that's a good way of approaching this, because THC, yes, it is a psychoactive component within cannabis, and that's what gets you high. But it is also a cannabinoid that has been shown to have a very strong therapeutic value. So in terms of managing patient wellness or serving patient wellness and for its therapeutic value, THC does not just get you high. It actually has kind of interactions within the body that help achieve patient wellness outcomes. So by making it possible for the operators in Maryland to provide a range of products that kind of run the gamut of THC levels, then patients are then going to be able to find kind of the product composition, the product with a chemical profile that best serves their individual conditions and meets their individual needs. For some, they may find that psychoactive effect actually helps with their relaxation, with their wellness. Others may not want that and will be able to purchase lower THC products.
We need to take another quick break here. And before we do, briefly, Gareth Murray or Lee Maddox, do either of you want to say anything to Lolita's point about allied professions like acupuncture and whether they will be part of this picture in some way?
I certainly can. I can tell you from watching the commission hearings ad nauseum, by the way, over the past year or so, that there is a training and education section of the commission, and they have been focused on CLEs and different sort of ongoing education that apply cross-discipline. So it really doesn't matter what discipline you're coming from. If you're in a profession that's going to be delivering healthcare services, you should be seeing some education coming your way. If not, please ask for it.
Okay. As I said, Lolita, thanks for your questions and comments. We need to take a short break. We'll talk much more about medical marijuana and what the industry may look like here in Maryland. When we come back, you can join our conversation with an email to midday@wypr.org or phone us 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about medical marijuana. On August 15th, the state will announce who will receive licenses to grow and process the drug. My guests are former Maryland State Police Captain Lee Maddox, an advocate for legalization, as well as a business applicant. She is CEO of CBH Ventures. Also, Pastor Gareth Murray, a former Maryland State delegate and an applicant with a different business. He is Director of Government and Community Affairs with Phytogenesis. And John Kaguya, Executive Vice President with a company that studies the legal cannabis industry. You can be part of this conversation. You can email us at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. Gareth Murray, let me ask you about this application process. In your view, what are the biggest hurdles you've encountered so far?
I think for us, the biggest hurdle, well, of course, writing it was a hurdle for starters, because I don't know if you've ever been in the proposal writing arena, but the difficulty comes in having really bright individuals attempting to stick with what's being asked for in the RFP, as opposed to, you know, sharing one's own thoughts and what's the latest and the greatest in terms of the research. The other thing is, you know, from a financial end, coming up with the application fees that are involved.
The
main thing, though, is the fact that one has to show that the competence that would be required to do this. And I think there are a lot of folks in certain communities that wanted to become involved but did not have the network that would enable them to do so. I haven't seen all of the other groups. I don't know what their configuration is like, but we intentionally established a group where we had community involvement. We allowed small investors, like $1,000, because we wanted this to be something that was Maryland's company and a company that allowed everyone to participate. And we have community-based advisors, advisory boards and the like. So I think the difficulty is just putting together a proposal that would be attractive and different.
I want to drill into a bit of what you're pointing out to us, because I confess I have not read the request for proposals, the RFP. I don't know exactly what discipline you felt under when you talked about not going off into the various thoughts of team members about what they thought the benefits were and sticking to the information requested. But I am wondering, John Kaguya, maybe you can enlighten me, whether, for example, the community strengths that Pastor Murray just referred to, or whether Lee Maddox's background as a Maryland State Police captain, are those points that the commission is taking into account as it chooses who's going to get a license and who won't?
So we don't know how the scoring is going to happen and what sort of criteria is going to be weighted as the commission is evaluating these applications. And perhaps this may be something that Lee could speak to. But we would say this. Generally, we have seen, when we've looked at the application process across states across the country, that there are elements of community involvement, expertise in running successful businesses in the past, the kind of performance track of the key investors or the key business stakeholders that are all influential factors. And ultimately, you know, one of the points that both Lee and Gareth have made has been that, you know, the role of prohibition in kind of undermining our the communities, and particularly the poor and communities of color, has been quite detrimental across the country. And so finding ways to use this transition from an illicit model to a licit model, finding ways to be invested in the community, to bring in participants from the community during this transition should certainly be considered one of the noteworthy objectives for program participants.
We got an email from Dennis who specifically asked, what about minority participation in this incredibly lucrative industry, which projections show would surpass corn as the top cash crop in Maryland? Also, what provisions are being made to allow patients to grow their own medicine? Actually, let's take those separately. Dennis's first point, minority participation, is that something which the commission is taking into account? John? Or does this fall into the area where you say we don't know how things are being scored yet?
I would actually maybe ask Leah. I don't believe the commission has made any special accommodations for minority applicants.
No, they haven't. At the beginning, my understanding is that in the original legislation, there was a piece that talked about minority participation, and that was taken out by the Attorney General's office.
So let me move on to Dennis's second question in his email. What provisions are being made to allow patients to grow their own medicine? Lee Maddox, I'm not under the impression that would be allowed under Maryland's law.
No, to the contrary. There is no provision that I know of that allows for the growing of any cannabis or marijuana-based plant in our current law. There are going to be border states, and this is going to be something that patients in the future and citizens generally are going to have to be very careful about. Because of our border states and our proximity to D.C. here, we are going to have to be vigilant in educating patients on what the law is and how best to our time, place, and manner restrictions geared towards patients is going to be a very interesting conversation to have.
We also got emails from Elizabeth and from Adam, both asking, how will people find out about jobs in this industry? Gareth Murray, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I know we will probably advertise, because one of the things that we're also adamant about is providing jobs for Marylanders. One of the populations that we especially want to offer or extend employment opportunities to is the disabled vet community. But yes, we will be advertising our positions so that we can get a good cross-section, a diverse workforce. And of course, they'll be Marylanders, which means when they're paid, the money stays here.
John Kaguya, are there any overall estimates given that we know how many licenses will be issued for growing, for processing, ultimately for dispensaries? What are the estimates of how many jobs this new industry is going to create in Maryland?
So we haven't seen any estimates for the number of jobs that could be created by the industry. But I would look at it this way. If we're starting off with 15 cultivation facilities and at least 94 dispensaries, those are jobs that are going to be created directly within the businesses, and the number of employees will vary between the cultivators and the processors. But that in and of itself will be a significant creation of new jobs. But I think it's also really important to think about all of the both ancillary service and support jobs that are going to be created through the formation of this industry. So everything from construction jobs in the development of these facilities, transportation and logistics, security, purchasing of materials to supply the cultivation facilities and the dispensaries. So, you know, we would not look at this just as the creation of jobs direct within businesses that touch the plant, the producers, processors, and retailers, but there's an entire ecosystem that's going to be stood up to support the industry that will be a magnitude of order very significantly larger than just those within the businesses that touch the plant.
We got an email from David who raises a particular point that I think relates to a larger point. He says, as someone who could probably benefit from medical marijuana for chronic pain, but who is also a local government employee, I'm wondering how other states have dealt with that problem. I think what David is referring to, and we've alluded to it a few times but haven't really addressed it, and that is the fact that growing, processing, and selling marijuana remains illegal under federal law. Lee Maddox, as a former law enforcement officer, how do you deal with that?
Well, I started by hiring a very good business attorney, who's told me not to be here, by the way. And the other thing that we...
I appreciate your ignoring your lawyer's advice.
Sorry about that. But the other thing is that I had to tell all my investors, every last one of them, that this business venture was illegal, per se illegal, under the federal law, and explain it all to them and let them know that all their personal and business investments and everything that touches their lives was subject to seizure at any random time. And that's a tough conversation to have with anyone, much less your local banker. So this has been an extremely interesting proposition.
Do you have a local banker?
I do.
I won't ask you who.
Thank you.
Gareth Murray, what kind of challenge is the federal illegality of this new industry? How is that affecting you?
You know, like Lee was saying, until the feds change, everyone knows that there's a certain risk involved. As I stated earlier, some physicians will not even become involved, knowing that it's in the best interest of their patients, simply because of the feds. And no, we don't have a banker yet. And that's another story. You know, you're talking about problems being built into this. I watched a guy from California being interviewed, and he said, you know, people are doing all kinds of crazy things in terms of putting the cash, hiding the cash to keep it safe, and because they can't go to a bank and open up a bank account and start to run their money through the bank. So it's tough. But I think that at the end of the day, when you look at the benefits, and that's what I stay focused on, the medicinal benefits, the young lady who talked about watching her mother suffer, my friend who I watch suffer, I think that the benefits outweigh the risk involved.
John Kaguya, we're almost out of time. I'll give you the last word. Is Maryland at a good spot in getting this industry stood up?
It is. And I think the thoughtful approach that was taken to developing the regulations, the clear guidelines, will certainly make it easier for these businesses to get set up. But if I might just come back to this question about the federal illegality, because this may be one aspect that impacts Maryland more so than other jurisdictions in the country, and that is Maryland has a very large base of federal employees in the state, and because of its illegality, those employees will not be able to participate in this program.
I have to cut you off there. I'm glad you shared that with us, but we are flat out of time. I want to thank you, John Kaguya, Executive Vice President of Industry Analytics for New Frontier. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Also want to thank Gareth Murray, Associate Pastor at First Baptist Church of Silver Spring, former Democratic State Delegate, Director of Government and Community Affairs with Phytogenesis. Good luck.
Thank you.
And thank you, retired Maryland State Police Captain Lee Maddox, CEO of CBH Ventures, also applied for all three licenses. Good luck.
Thank you, Sheila. It was a pleasure.
Lunch today provided by the Baltimore Chef Shop on the Avenue in Hamden, offering a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. More on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com. I want to thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow for a debate on universal pre-kindergarten. Is it all it's cracked up to be? We'll talk about that tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great afternoon.